Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Newtown Theatre. Please welcome a man who is doing his 25th Fringe but still doesn't know where anywhere in Edinburgh is. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Welcome. Welcome to my podcast. This is lovely to see you all. Thanks for coming along. This is Richard Herring's Let's Stuff Twats podcast. It's sort of become that over the last few days. My opening monologue has been about what women shouldn't put in their vaginas. There's been a new story every day, basically. It's everything. Don't put anything in your vagina. So I decided we'd do a podcast now where we just put different things up women's vaginas. Yeah, women's vaginas, mate, not cow's vaginas, like you were thinking. And then we ring up an expert, says, was that a good idea? And they say, no, it wasn't a good idea. You've got to keep it fresh with the podcast. I'm just joking. Don't worry, it's a kind of joke. But I was chatting to the man who busts with a saxophone under the bridge on King Stable Road, just on the way down. I go past him every day. It's not a heavy footfall down there. It's an odd place to busk. He's the kind of guy who goes, no, I'm not doing this for money. I'm doing this for the love of busking. I don't really want to get... It's just passing trade. I imagine it might just be because under that bridge there's quite a good echo, which makes him sound better than he is. But he is very cool. He calls it Rehelestapa, anyway. In between saxophone solos. So what's been going on? I went to see my first grown-up show of The Fringe last night. When I came up here this year, I thought, this would be nice. I'm only doing the podcast. I can go out in the evening and see the next day's guest, see their show, and then I'll be able to talk about their show. I've got two young kids with me. I've not been out at all. We managed to get a babysitter last night, and we went to see one of our previous guests, Jenna Freeman, who was phenomenal, but, you know, wasn't much help, because unless I can travel back through time in terms of the podcast. But do go and see her. She's great. But she was on the assembly in George Square. And I think for some reason, I think because when I'd gone to pick up the tickets at the Pleasance, they hadn't printed up and said, you'll need to go to the assembly venue to print these up. And so in my head, I got it was George Street, and then I thought, oh, no, it's George Square. My wife said, do check where that is. When you said, I know where George Square is. It's the end of George Street. It's where the assembly. I know where that is. And so we had dinner just near Bristow Square, and then walked all the way down to St. Andrew's Square. As I said, it's got a different name than I expected. There was nothing there. Luckily, we had time to get a cab back up to the actual venue. And when I got in the cab and said, "Can we go to the George Square Theatre, please?" And, "Oh, yeah, in it's 5 years ago, I was in the George Square Theatre. That's where both my shows were. So I probably should know." You can imagine my wife was not that amused. We were both quite tired and we made a walk. She did 20,000 steps yesterday before this excursion. I didn't make a fuss when she set the burglar alarm off in the middle of the night, but I tell you, I fucking caught it. I'll tell you that. A lot of trouble. Anyway, do go and see Jenna Friedman. I hope you'll enjoy today's show. It's going to be a little bit different. I'll crack on with our first guest because he has to rush off to do his other show in the George Square. He's at the George Square. I notice he's in the same venue roughly as Jenna Friedman, which again I did a show there as well. Once. I don't know how I didn't realise. So it's so close to where we're staying as well. It's hilarious. He's have been coming up 25 times. How did I not know? Confusing, though, isn't it? That is there to confuse people. That must have got a few people, not people who've played the George Square Theatre so much. Anyway, he is probably best known for his performance as Daniel in Everything Is Like Sunday. That's Sunday with an A-E on the end, like an ice cream. Well, I don't need to tell you, that's why you've come here tonight. Will you please welcome the amazing Rob Orton, ladies and gentlemen?
Welcome, thank you very much. Come and sit down, pull up a microphone.
You'll need to pick up that microphone or we'll be in all kinds of trouble.
Hello.
So, can you tell me a bit about being Daniel and Everything Is Like Sunday?
Yeah. My friend Chris Foster wrote a story about someone who works in an ice cream van in Morecambe, and that was me.
Is it a good role? Did it do well?
Pretty good, yeah. I mean, it was freezing when we were doing it.
Yeah, that'd be the ice cream.
Yeah, the ice cream was the ice cream was probably the warmest thing about it. Actually,
was it?
Okay. Morecambe was particularly cold, but it was good. Yeah, that was. I haven't really done much acting. I go for quite a lot of auditions.
Yeah.
I had an audition for a part in the new Mummy film.
Oh, have you?
Didn't get it.
Oh, okay. What are we going to be playing in The Mummy?
Well, the lead, I think. but then I got... The only one I got was because I do... On stage, I read from books and things like that. And... I went for an audition, and the audition was to be a bad performance poet in Cold Feet.
Yeah.
When they all go to a festival, yeah. And they go into this spoken word tent, and I got that.
Yeah.
I got that part.
But sometimes you just go to audition, you go, "Listen, I know I'm going to get this. This is going to be fine."
Yeah, yeah. And I was in the audition, and it was meant to be like this hit called poet, and I said, "Well, you know, some of these spoken word artists actually read from their phone." So I said, "I could do that." And they said, "Yeah, that's a good idea."
Yeah.
Then I just got it. Yeah.
Got it. I mean,
it was good. That was great, though. I'm not knocking it because to be on that, you know, that's the kind of thing that my parents' friends can engage with.
Yeah.
Like, "Oh, Rob, I saw Rob on Cold Feet. He's doing well." Do you know what I mean? Like, all this, I've been slogging my ass off for 10 years. Well, longer. Well, the first gig I did was in 2007.
Yeah.
And then I do one 10-minute... Well, 10-second bit on Cold Feet, and that's a bit that they engage with, you know. Yeah. But my parents were up yesterday, actually. They came in. I did two shows yesterday, one at 10 to 3, one at 10 to 6 in the same room. My parents came to both. They've been every year, so that, you know, that's amazing, that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's nice. So you were working in advertising before you became...
I did a degree in graphic arts because I love painting and drawing. That was the first thing at school that I realised I could kind of do.
Yeah.
And then, so I love art and all that side of things. And then I thought, what kind of industry wants someone who likes having ideas? I just love having ideas. And that's what all these shows are about that I'm doing up here.
Yeah.
And so I got a job in advertising and I was a creative and I was doing stuff for things like the House of Fraser Sale. And I was drawing cartoons with worms on them, and the worms were saying, "Oh, House of Fraser got a sale on, you know," and the other one would be like, "No, I didn't know that." And then the creative director's like, "Well, we can't use this. What are you doing?" Then they're never going to go for this. Yeah. And I kept on doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it. And then we, you know, I ended up getting, I actually did an advert for Florette the salad. Do you know Florette salad? Does anyone know what that is? Yeah. I know people always slag off Edinburgh for not having any green stuff, but yeah, it's easy. If you go to a supermarket, you can find it, can't you? But it's... Yeah, I did that, and that was on TV, but, I mean, yeah. So, but the thing is, with advertising, is it's so almost the perfect job for someone who considers themselves to be a creative.
Yeah.
But it's a business, and when I was doing advertising, I was getting really frustrated because I was having all these ideas that I really liked, and then I started filling up these notebooks with, like, random stuff, and then it was just bits of writing, really. And then the creative director said, oh, I'm having a fireworks party. We're going to do some poetry. And I said, oh, I've got some stuff I've written down. I don't know what it is. Can I stand up and say it? And he was like, yeah, okay. So I went up and stood up and read out these bits. I did, like, one was about Nigel. I've got a flatmate called Nigel who lives in a shell. I guess that means that I do as well. And, I mean, it was hit and miss. That was... But, you know, like orange and opinionless, that's what I want from a carrot and things like that. And then it went on from there. And then after the gig, they said there was a person there who runs a spoken word night. Bang said the gun, they were actually doing it at the book festival there on Saturday. And they said, do you want to come and join us and be part of Bang said the gun? So I did that. And then I kind of got that fireworks party gig was my first ever gig. And then I just got the bug for it, really. I tried to do all the open mics I could. Went to the Poetry Cafe in Covent Garden and did Poetry Unplugged. And someone came up to me afterwards and said, oh, do you want to do my alternative comedy night? I said, well, can I just do what I did then? And he's like, yeah. So I said, okay. So I did that. And then started doing more comedy gigs.
Yeah.
And, you know, some would go well, some would go really badly. And then it's kind of been the same ever since.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's in, you're doing interesting stuff, and that's always, anyway, that kind of, it is that proper alternative comedy. It would have worked on the original alternative comedy scene, I think, as well. But it is that sort of bravery. I had Spencer Jones on the other day, who's, you know, his stuff is so wild, and you kind of think, how do you take that step to go, right, I'm going to give this a go? But I suppose if that's what you've always done, then you're not kind of saying, oh, well, will this work? If I just go, this is what I do, and like it or lump it, isn't it?
Yeah, you kind of get a bit battle-hardened to it, really.
Yeah.
Like, you get punched so much, you're just like, well, come on. There's only so much that can go wrong in this show. And but I enjoy it. It's a thrill, especially now when... Because I've been doing it my first solo show up here was a show all about the colour yellow, called The Yellow Show. Because I came up at 2009 and did a thing called the Big Comedy Breakfast on the in the Apex Hotel on the Grass Market, and Lionel Blair was doing tap and chat on the in the next room, and we were doing this thing, 15 minutes each for comedians and three comedians and me, and then it was. That, and then I saw people doing hour-long shows. I was like, oh, I'd like to try and do that. And then I did a thing on the Free Fringe about the colour yellow, and obviously no one was coming. So,
well, no one else was doing that kind of. No one else has really thought about, you know, having to go at colours before. It was about time someone had a go at them one at a time.
Yeah.
But that is it.
No, but the thing is that what I did was I was just like, what am I going to do here? So. I got a yellow paddling pole, blew it up, got a yellow coat, got as many different layers of yellow as I could, like bunting. I got one of those noodles, you know, for the swimming pool, the foam ones.
Yeah.
Cut a slice in the end with a Stanley knife, put my Yellow Show flyer in it, and then fished it out like that, like a fishing rod with a flyer in it. And then people who liked the flyering technique would take a flyer, and then, like, all the Edinburgh locals, like the young people who'd like rip the noodle out of my hands and run off down the street. I'm like, oh, come on, give me a break. I've been sat here for 4 hours this week. And it was just savage. But I was doing it for 4 hours a day, and like people were coming and I thought when I was coming up here, I was like, I love this.
Yeah.
I love this material that I've got here. And then you come up, you get a few 3-star reviews, and then you're like, oh, it's not as good as I thought it was. But I looked, I've got a bag of props of all my old shows, and I was looking at it, and with the Yellow Show, I made these Yellow Vision glasses, like 3D glasses out of cardboard, and got the acetate, and it was all yellow. Eric was there, he was in the audience today. Still got that pair of glasses. And I looked at those pair of glasses and I thought, that was as good an idea as I thought it was. Yeah. People try to knock it out of you.
Yeah.
But you've just got to stick with it and keep going with it.
You have stuck with it and you've done... there's a great little sort of pomp performance poem about buying yellow stuff from the supermarket, which I presume is part of that show.
Yeah,
I mean, which is, I love the idea of going to a supermarket and only buying yellow. Did you actually ever do that?
I didn't buy it, but I filled up the trolley with all yellow stuff and made a stop frame animation part of it. So you got like melons and then all the like cloths and you look a bit crazy, but
yeah. Well, I'd be tempted to take and see what the checkout girl said. I mean, I got a whole show out of what the checkout girl said about my basket of yogurt. So it'd be kind of when they just noticed that everything was yellow. I think that'd be quite an interesting thing to get some reaction again. But it's a lovely. I mean, it's that mixture between poetry and comedy and weirdness and also just. But I love those Edinburgh shows, and that's what I like to do in Edinburgh shows: take an idea and then run with it, rather than going, I've got loads of material about this. I've got material about a banana. I might as well do a show about yellow things.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to create from the idea. And so you've done that. Is it your eighth show?
Eighth one, yeah.
Is it consecutive? You've done one every year?
Yeah.
I mean, that's also the thing with Edinburgh now, is it takes so long. I know last year's show particularly probably broke through more than... Has it just been a gradual process of kind of getting more and more...
Yeah, it has. I mean, I started off in the Banshee Labyrinth.
Yeah.
And it was a small cave, and then did that. And then the good thing is the people who like it come back. And the people who don't like it don't come back.
Yeah.
And I am so pleased that it is that way around. It'd just be awful, wouldn't it? Have you seen Rob Orton? Yeah, I hate him. Are you going this year? Yeah. Big time. See you there.
I've always been a huge fan of Bridget Christie, and she would do these very weird shows to start with. And it's been lovely fascinating seeing her progression through her career. But her early shows were proper weird. She would be the Plague of London
dress up as an ant, didn't she?
Yeah, yeah, she did a whole show about ants. I just loved them. And then did a really interesting show about working for the Daily Mail, which was quite different. And then she's moved on to what she's doing now as well. But it was that exact thing where you're sitting amongst a room of people where some of them are slightly angry about what's going on, and you're sitting there laughing your head off.
It's great, isn't it?
But then you do go, that was the one, that was probably out of all the Edinburghs, that was the one act I would always go back and see again.
And I think when people walk out as well, like, it kind of galvanises the people in the room who are enjoying it. They're rooting for you a bit more, aren't they?
So
to answer your question, I was doing it, I did a show about yellow, then I did a show about the sky, then faces, then water, then sleeping, then hair, where I grew my massive beard and really long hair, and then I did a show about talking, and it's just a case of keeping on doing it, really, and just as long as I'm having ideas that I like.
Yeah.
And this show's all about time, and every year I'm just like, oh, come on, just try and do it and just try your best, and it's going all right so far. I mean,
last year's show was the second best reviewed show in the Fringe. According to your website, there's only one way to get better. That's a risky thing to have. If you've hit the top, but then if you hit the top, then there's the only ways down.
Well, second, didn't it? Still got somewhere to go.
Yeah, you could go up.
No. I was pleased with that. I mean, I just want people to come, and if they like it, great, and if they don't, then that's all right. But it's just about trying and just seeing and testing myself. I love testing myself and seeing if I can do it. And I mean, I've had some experiences up here. Like, I was one year when I was doing the water show, and I got food poisoning, and it was one of the bad food poisoning experiences compared to the good ones, and it was just really. And I thought, I'm not going to be able to do my show, can't? And then adrenaline just takes over, and you kind of find out new bits about yourself.
Yeah.
I think up here, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you sort of have. You can't really afford to take a day off, can you?
No.
You do have to battle through, unless you're literally about to die or dead.
Yeah.
Then you, I think even if I was dead, I'd still leave instructions to go on.
Yeah, I was speaking to someone yesterday, and they were saying that they used to work in a theatre and they get all the show reports, and they were working at a theatre in London, and after the show, an old lady came up and said, my husband is over there. He passed away in the first half of the play.
Yeah.
But I knew that he would want me to stay and watch the end of it. So he's over there, he's dead. It's just a corpse in the thing. And it's like, yeah.
Could have been saved as well. If they got him in the interval, he would have been. They could have taken him to hospital and got him back. That's marriage for you.
But
We'll leave it, see how it goes. So you decided to keep the beard in there. I mean, you had longer. It was longer, right, when you did
the
hair shave?
Yeah, it was. Well, I got the photographs taken for this show when I had a beard, so I thought, well, I'm going to have one. But I had an audition for something, and they shaved it off quite a lot for a show that I actually... Yeah, that was the second audition I got, but I don't know if I'm allowed to... It's only a tiny part, but... Okay. Yeah, so now I look like... Yeah, dogs do look at me differently, you know.
Yeah.
They do. I mean, I saw a dog, and it was side on... And I was coming down like this, and the dog went like this. It does a double take, you know. It's really neat. And look up at you like, what breed are you? I'll just stand up like that.
you didn't have the beard for before those shows. It's quite a strong look.
Well, thanks very much.
But I did a show where I grew a toothbrush
moustache. Yeah, I was just looking at that this morning.
And I was very, very keen to get rid of that every time I possibly could, yeah.
Yeah.
There it is again.
Did you get quite a lot of stick for that?
No, I mean, I think it would be different now, weirdly. The show was sort of about trying to persuade people to vote to stop right-wing politicians doing well, so it worked.
Yeah.
And thank God for me. But I didn't, people just laugh. You know, people were like a bit. The worst thing, people were a bit scared of you because you must get it a little bit anyway. People must think, oh fuck. I think you saw you saying someone. When you did an interview, you said that a mother and child, the tube doors had opened, and the mother had said, we're going in the next carriage because you were a bit more. When it was
properly like wild man, it.
So it just sort of scares people, and people laugh, but sort of want your out of eyesight, but not out of earshot. So it's sort of a slightly weird thing. And then one guy, white van guy, said, "Well done, mate. You're a man after my own heart," which was the worst thing that happened to me in the entire time I did it.
Wow.
But there's a bit of laughter, but just confusion. But I wasn't like dressed as Hitler, so it was just a confusing.
Yeah.
It was a confusing man with long hair and a weird moustache.
So that was 2009, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2009, 2010, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a different time. It was a different time where, the idea of Nazis being back in the world was sort of comical and ridiculous. I think it might be me that sparked the interest. I think that white van might be, fuck it, if that guy is doing it, I'm going to do it too. Well, let's have the courage of my convictions. Hitler wasn't that bad. And so in the Time show, which I haven't seen yet because we almost clash, and in fact I've got to keep an eye on the time because you do you talk about time travel? I'm very fascinated by time travel.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Do you have any theories about time travel?
It's very impossible, isn't it?
It's impossible.
No, I just think that I'd love it if I could. I like, really like metal detecting. I'd love it if you could dig up stuff from the future. Wouldn't it? As well as the past.
Maybe you need to dig upwards, that's the thing. We're just doing it and we're all going down.
Into the sky.
No one says, anyone turn the metal detector the other way up yet? As if they do. iPhone 11.
It's interesting. What I love about just doing these shows is that I just try to buy myself a bit of space to think about things.
Yeah.
So I can... right time in the middle of the spider diagram and then just spend a year thinking about it, and it's it makes me, I think what I like is like sometimes you get some clever clogs in the audience who's like, you know nothing about time, but all the top scientists who probably some of them we had on the has Brian Cox been on?
I'm trying to get Brian Cox on, but I haven't.
But he would say no one really knows what anything is.
Yeah.
So I just go by that.
Well, there's sort of, because of infinity, you know, that this thing.
Exactly.
There's, you know, time has always been or must have started at some point, and it must always go on or end at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
But it suggests to me that we've just got it wrong, because that logically can't be the case. So time and infinity and mathematics must actually, or they're very useful ways of working
things
on Earth.
They are very useful,
but
yeah.
I don't think they are real, because they don't make sense, do they?
No, well, the thing is, when you talk about infinity and things like that, when, you know, it just keeps on going and going and going and going and going in every direction.
Yeah.
So that means that you're the centre of the universe.
Yeah.
I think it was the Dalai Lama who said that.
Yeah.
And it's true though, isn't it? Because there's no wall.
Yeah.
And it's just so. Then I start thinking about things like finding my HMRC login number, and it just seems a bit irrelevant. I'm just like, oh God, what a trial. Just makes things seem a bit pathetic. But I love it because it frees me up.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel like I can do whatever I want to do, because I'm like a piece of dust with a heartbeat, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
It's just like, it doesn't matter. So that's what I love. I love punk music as well, and just like homemade stuff and just making something that wouldn't exist if it wasn't for you. And you go like, yeah, come on, I want to try and go up to the Edinburgh Festival and try and get my insides out and just have a good time, you know.
Yeah, and ultimately it's all pointless, because, you know, the time goes on for an infinite amount of time, so there's already been infinite time, there's infinite time to come, so your finite amount of time here is actually zero.
Mm.
It's actually nothing, and everything you've done is a waste of time. And just specifically you as well, it's not...
Yeah.
These podcasts are going to.
You said that one and brought me on.
These podcasts will last forever. That's all I know. I'm safe. People will want to hear me talking to Les Dennis in the year 2525. They'll still be interested. So I will be fine. We're going to have to go. Shall I ask you an emergency question before you go?
Yeah.
I'll ask you this. This is my new one for Edinburgh. I might have a new one today. If you could take one item from any museum or art gallery and take it home with you, they said you can have one thing out of any museum or art gallery, and it's yours. Mm. Which one item from all the world's museums and art galleries would you take home and have at your house?
Probably the Heywayne by Constable.
Yeah, nice.
Just because I go to the National Gallery quite a lot in London, because you can go to the toilet, and but also it's got a really comfy sofa in front of the Heywayne,
yeah,
and it's like real old leather, and I just sit there, and yeah, it's a great painting that.
Yeah. Maybe you should take the sofa though, if it's the sofa.
Yeah. I like the sofa. Yeah, toss up between the sofa and the toilet.
And I think this is a question that came out of something I was reading about you, but I can't remember why.
Mm.
What's the least impressive thing you can spend a lot of money on? That's quite a hard question, I'm sorry.
I think a watch.
A watch?
I was looking at, because I'm doing the show all about time, I've been looking in all the watch windows, and there was a watch, someone probably in here has got an expensive watch on, but this one was, I think it was £42,800, and that watch costs £42,773 more than mine.
Yeah.
And I know people like. Have you got an expensive watch?
I mean, I've got an Apple watch, so it's quite expensive.
Yeah,
I mean,
but that's useful, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of useful.
Yeah, I tried to sell books after my show, and someone paid with their watch.
Yeah, I love
yesterday.
Doing that. That's I love doing.
Do you tap on the tube with your watch then?
Yeah, that's the best thing about it. But now I've moved out of London, so I can't.
You
want
to watch it? You might crack the screen.
No, it's alright. You just hold it above. You don't have to bang it.
The energy.
Yeah,
gone.
That's true. I saw on Facebook there was, you know, you get those ads come up. There was an ad for a watch, a monthly watch club where they would send you an expensive watch every month. Have you seen that advert? And so you could then get a collection of watches, so people are like getting 12 watches a year. Presumably people just like to have a different
I hope they don't come to my show.
I mean, that is pretty impressive.
It is very impressive, yeah.
I mean, it's impressive someone's managed to make that a business, and enough people go, yeah, I reckon I need 12. I think if you do that, you should have to wear them all. You start with one, and then you have to wear them just all. They should have increasingly large straps, so you can get them all around, and then one that's just around your chest. Anyway, the show sounds fantastic. I'm not sure I'm going to get to see it, but I understand you're touring the show as well.
Yeah, I'm going to do a tour in the spring, yeah, so hopefully I'll, yeah.
I'll come and see it on tour. Well. And where are you on, and where's George Square?
250 Assemblies.
Why is
Studio
it not
5?
The end of George Street, George Square?
It should be all, yeah. It should be, shouldn't it? But it's in Assembly Studio 5, George Square. Near where all the outside beer gardens are.
And then on tour, and you've got a website where people
I've
can
find...
I've got
a website, yeah. RobAuton.co.uk is.
Who got RobAuton.com?
I don't know, but he's probably doing pretty successful. It's like the person who's got RobAuton@hotmail.com. I've got .co.uk.
Okay.
One of my friends said, yeah, he's probably got an American sitcom by now. All the work that's gone there. That's what I keep telling myself anyway. All those offers for film roles have gone to robauton@hotmail.com. But anyway.
Well, I'll let you go and do your show, ladies and gentlemen. Rob Auton.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you, man. Lovely. Right.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yes, we've got another guest in a second. Before we get to that, I will just say, after the show, I am going to be sitting in the entrance to the theatre as usual. I'm very happy to say hello, very happy to do selfies, sign your programmes that you've got. We'll talk about the programmes again later on. And I'm also selling my Emergency Questions books. There's the brand new one with 1,001 questions on a knockdown price. There's the old one with 500 questions. It's the same price, not as many questions. You have to decide. You can get them both, and if you get them both, you get a free sheet of wonderful stickers, which I think will shortly be available. We've got a few left from our Kickstarter campaign, you can buy these separately as well, and they will be available at gofasterstrike.com as well. And anything else, do come and see the show. If you we're on tour. We just announced Simon Evans will be doing the Brighton show on September the 15th. And Connie Huck is going to be at one of the Leicester Square Theatre gigs. Yeah? She tried to kill me with a boat once. She's on with Grayson Perry, so that's going to be a great show on the 11th of November. So do book ahead for that, already selling very well. And there's a whole load more. Go to richhain.com/gigs and you can find out all about that. Right, my next guest. This is going to be very... Oh, actually, it's all on my computer. I've decided to try and beat him at his own game, and I've put everything on the computer. We've done a slight bit of prep for this interview, as you'll see why in a second. But just putting my password in. Quite a lot of that going on, but I do have I've got some questions on here. So will you please welcome my next guest? He's probably best known for playing Dick Pounder in in The Stag Do. That's the stag with a double G do. The Stag Do. Will you please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Lee Ridley, Lost Voice Guy. And coming on here is Bollings from Bollings and Nerin, James Hingley, who's the man responsible for putting all these podcasts up within 3 or 4 hours. So thank you very much. Hello, Lee. How are you doing? Lovely to see you, man. How are you doing? Come in. Wow. Thank you. Oh, shit. Didn't they smash my computer? That would have been a good start. I was thinking of getting my computer to speak as well, and then just I could sit back and relax. Thank you to James Hingley there. So, Lee, how are you doing? Are you okay?
Good, thanks.
Good, that's all right, great. What do you remember about playing Dick Pounder in The Stag Do?
The Stag Do was my very first on-screen role, okay. And it's a very funny independent film, which was filmed in Newcastle, in the Northeast. I must say that I have very fond memories of playing Dick Pounder, mainly because he was the owner of a strip club, and so I got to spend a couple of days watching women dance provocatively. I think I only had two or three lines in the entire film, but it definitely put me off ever going to a strip club for real. Everything I touched was either sticky or smelly. I don't usually have that problem because my iPad screen wipes clean easily.
So good. You turned up every day, I'm sure, even when you weren't in the scenes. But you're also maybe slightly better known for your recent appearance and win on Britain's Got Talent. There's quite a big decision. I know you've been doing stand-up for a while. What made you decide to give that competition a go?
I'll be honest, it wasn't an easy decision to make. Before I went on it, I think talent shows were looked down upon by many comedians. And I was one of them. I just didn't see it as something that I wanted to do, and I didn't particularly think it helped my career that much. I also worried about becoming known as that guy that won Britain's Got Talent and only having 15 minutes of fame. A few things helped me change my mind. One of the main reasons that I decided to do it was the fact that there isn't really many opportunities for comedians to reach a large audience on television anymore. There's only really programs like the Apollo Left, and even then, it's hard to get a break on anything like that. It was actually my agent who suggested that Britain's Got Talent would be a good way of reaching a much bigger audience. I still took a while to be convinced, but in the end I knew that he was right. I think Britain's Got Talent gets about 10 million viewers, so I would have been silly just to dismiss it. Even after agreeing to do it, I didn't tell many of my friends on the circuit because I was worried about being judged or as being viewed as selling my soul to Simon Cowell. It was only after my audition was shown on the television that I realized I should have trusted my comedy mates more. They were all so supportive of me when they saw it, and it meant a lot to me. I actually think that having their support helped me go on to win the whole thing.
That's great. Yeah, there is a real camaraderie. I think especially behind certain comedians on the circuit, which I'm sure you're one of them, where people are, you know, comedians have this reputation of being like selfish and competitive. But that's good to hear. And what was it like on the program? Did it lead up to your expectations, or was it?
It was a very intense experience.
Yeah.
There was an awful lot of filming to do for it, and I seemed to be getting asked the same questions over and over again when they were interviewing me for segments of the show. I didn't really know what to expect beforehand because I'd never given it much thought before. The whole process was pretty surreal and, at times, I found it hard to cope with mentally. I was very lucky to have some great family and friends with me during the whole thing. I think I would have went crazy if I had to do it on my own. Yeah. I was also very impressed by the way that the crew at Britain's Got Talent looked after me as well. One of my main worries about doing the show was the fact that they might take advantage of me and exploit my disability.
Yeah.
But they made it clear from day one that this wouldn't be the case. And the crew always looked out for me and put my needs first. So that helped me a lot. I developed such a great relationship with most of the people working on the program, and I think that that's a massive credit to them. You always hear horror stories about the way people are treated on these kinds of shows, so it was nice to see the other side to that.
Yeah, that's very interesting to hear, because you sort of do think those shows sort of chew people up and spit them out. Quite, you know, it's finding the next person and moving on, and that's the problem with it. It's interesting that a lot of comedians have gone on that show more recently and done very well as well. Although, you know, I think you're the only one to have won the whole thing as a comedian. It's not.
Yes.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Well done. And you joked about Simon Cowell having plastic surgery, which I haven't noticed. There's a sort of weird photo in the paper today looking like a sort of robot, but I'm sure that you can't have plastic surgery for that. Did Cowell really take those jokes well, or was is it difficult afterwards?
Simon is a pussycat, really. Out of all of the judges, he was obviously the one that I was worried about most, because of his reputation. But, if anything, he's probably the judge that I've bonded with most. And he seemed to take the jokes about him really well. Both him and David Walliams have been really supportive since. David came to see my Edinburgh show last year, which was really nice of him. Although, having one of my comedy heroes in the crowd did put me off a bit. Especially as he's too tall to blend into the rest of the audience. I've seen Simon a few times since winning as well, and he's been really good with giving me advice.
Disappointing. I mean, you have to say, they've given you £250,000. So you've got to say nice things about them. Can I have some of that? Can I have some of your money? I'll spend it on podcasts. Let's see what... it looks like he's typing yes. Yes, you can, Richard. You can do that. Thank you.
It's in the post.
So, I mean, hopefully the people at home know who you are and have understood what's going on with this, but can you, just in case anyone's not clear what's going on, can you tell us a little bit about your disability?
My disability is called cerebral palsy. It affects people in different ways, but in my case, it means I have no speech, my right side of my body is weaker than my left, and I walk like a zombie out of The Walking Dead.
I'm sure you do, but do you have sort of funny and terrible experiences of prejudice that you've experienced, especially I guess before people knew who you were?
I think most prejudice that I experience is just because people aren't used to talking to a disabled person. And so say the wrong thing accidentally. For example, when I'm out with me friends, other people will talk to me through my mates, instead of just talking to me directly. Other people just ask the most inappropriate questions. One of the most common questions is, have I ever tried to talk just to see what would happen? As if I had just been lazy all of my life, and therefore...
Helpful. No, that's a helpful comment. That could have... Oh, no, I never thought that. Oh, bloody hell, shit. It's my whole act gone. And do you think, since you've become more famous and more recognisable, have attitudes towards you been changed and been better?
Definitely. The general public have been so supportive as well. I'm always getting stopped for selfies and having people congratulate me. And it has been really nice. I'm very grateful for all the kind words I have received. One of the best things to happen since I won is that people are engaging with me a lot more than they would have in the past. For the first time, they seem comfortable talking to a disabled person. I'm used to being stared at for negative reasons, so it's nice to be stared at for positive reasons for a change. It's just a shame that I had to win a talent show to get to this point. For most disabled people, this isn't an option.
Yeah. It's true, but also, there's so little opportunity for disabled people on TV, and the percentage of people who are disabled have some level of disability is huge, and yet the number of disabled people you see in anything, in soap operas, whatever, is so tiny that it's great that you got the opportunity to be on primetime TV and be such a great ambassador for that role. But it is crazy as well that that's the case. Maybe you've sort of answered this already, but what do you think makes people so weird about disability?
I think it comes down to education. People just aren't used to interacting with someone with a disability on a regular basis. I think attitudes towards disabled people in society have definitely got better. I've certainly seen a big improvement since I was younger. But I also think that there's still a long way to go as well. And that's why I would like to see more disabled comedians booked by comedy clubs, appearing at festivals and being shown on television. Basically, more disabled people being portrayed in a positive light. The general public need to see that we're not all just scroungers and benefits cheats. They need to see that disabled people can contribute an awful lot to society, and they need to see that we have a sense of humor just like anyone else. Programs like The Last Leg on Channel 4 have paved the way, but there's still a lot that could be done. Only when we see disabled people on our stages and on our screens as much as anyone else will attitudes really change. And only then will disabled people feel fully a part of society.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's interesting. I mean, obviously, I sort of accidentally fell into working with Scope 15 or 16 years ago after running the marathon for them. And it's, it is weird. You do, even if you're a liberal thinking person, you have these prejudices and worries. And I guess people are afraid of a disability happening to themselves as well, which they should be, because it will happen to them as well. I always make that quote, but I asked the disabled person at a party once how you should refer to non-disabled people, because non-disabled seems wrong and abled seems wrong. And she said, "We call you the not yet disabled." Which, and that, out of everything I spoke to her about, that was the moment you go, yeah. And all the things that disabled people are struggling to get, like access to buildings and transport, we would all benefit from that. I mean, anyone with a pram would benefit from that for a start, which is most people. But we're all going to benefit from that eventually. It's kind of crazy. People don't want to think about it, I think. They don't want to think about their own vulnerability, I guess.
Especially in Edinburgh.
Yeah. I mean, this is a terrible, terrible city, even if you can walk quite well as I can. do you think it's okay to joke about disability, and do people ever get offended with you joking about disability?
I think any subject can be joked about if it's handled in the right way. Because I base most of my jokes on myself, I think I get away with it a bit more. The funny thing is that the people who usually get offended by one of my jokes are people who are getting offended on behalf of someone else. For example, I once had someone walk out one of my gigs once, and when someone asked her why, she said it was because she worked with disabled people. So she was getting offended on behalf of them, without really knowing whether they would have been offended or not. I sometimes get offended by jokes myself. Maybe because it's a joke about something I'm too familiar with. But I also appreciate the context that the joke is in, and that other people might find it hilarious. Like I say, it's all about the writing and the performance of the joke, and the circumstances you are telling it in.
Yeah. Comedy's a great way to communicate these kind of big ideas as well, you know, and I think, and like you say, showing people that you can laugh and you have a sense of humour about stuff, it gives empathy to people who might not have empathy in the first place, or might be, you know, just confused. It's just something that the people, you know, it's a shame people aren't able to address it more, but hopefully they will. Let's talk about the iPad. How does this work for you then, this way of communicating?
It's just a text-to-speech app on my iPad. Basically, I type in what I want to say, and it speaks it for me. Obviously, this means that I've become very good at spelling over the years. You can also save sentences and phrases that you use frequently as well. Which is a good job, because this interview would take fucking ages otherwise.
We may have given you some of the questions ahead of the time. It may have happened. So what phrases do you have? Do you have like preloaded phrases that are ready to go? And what are they? And I know most of these questions I've asked just in the air already.
Why don't you ask me some random questions and find out?
Okay. Shall I ask you? Well, I know there is one in there. I'll ask you the one that I know is in there. Have you ever tried to suck your own cock, Lee Ridley?
Of course. Why do you think I've got so many bumps and bruises on my head?
Let's try an emergency question. Let's try, have you ever seen a ghost? Let's see if that's preloaded in there. Is that a question you get asked a lot? I'm going to guess no.
Please, can you repeat yourself?
Have you ever seen a ghost?
Beans on toast.
Okay, so... What would you like for dinner? It's good that beans on toast is in there. Unless there's a lot of food in there.
Blow job, please.
Yeah, okay. It's been a good interview. It's been a long, long Edinburgh for me, looking after kids. And do you get heckled? Do people heckle you? Do you have heckle put downs in there ready to go? Because my audience will heckle you. They're very impatient people.
I've never been heckled yet, actually.
Really?
I'd be interested in seeing what would happen if I was, though. I think that'd be a great social experiment. Heckling a disabled person would probably be frowned upon in most situations. I do have some comebacks stored just in case, though.
Okay.
I'm dying to use them.
Okay, good.
Maybe someone in the audience should heckle me so that I can try them out.
Anyone want to give it a go? I mean, be careful. That's what you say. You're the luckiest. Stop pretending you can't talk to get to a quarter million pounds. You cunt. How about that? Who said that? God. Why do they bring their own microphone, especially to do it? That's awful.
Yes. Well, Stephen Hawking fucked your mother. Then you have to run the virus checker.
It's good. Good, more people should heckle you. Hey, we're doing pretty. We're doing. I guess I could have just asked you how long the answers took, and then I would have known how long we got. We've got plenty more questions to go. So that's good. You've what were you doing before you got into comedy? What was going on before?
Before I was a stand-up comedian, I was a journalist. I had studied journalism at university and had worked for a few local newspapers in Newcastle, as well as the BBC. Most recently, I was working in the media team of Sunderland City Council. Deciding to do comedy definitely changed my life, though. I'll be honest, I haven't always been good at expressing myself. In fact, despite what you see on stage, I still don't think I am now. I've always been really self-conscious about myself and what other people think of me because of my disability. I guess it comes with the territory. I've just got used to feeling paranoid and awkward, even around people that I know. I'm incredibly shy and I'm never completely relaxed because my brain won't let me be. With that mindset, maybe doing stand-up comedy was a weird choice for me. Why would I want to get up on stage and let loads of strangers judge me even more? I'm still trying to figure that out. What I do know is that doing stand-up comedy has taught me to let go of my inhibitions a bit. When I'm up on stage, I feel like I've found the perfect way to express myself. I have always used humor to help me feel more relaxed. I've always enjoyed making other people laugh. It's a great feeling. Plus, if I didn't laugh, I'd most definitely cry.
Yeah, well, but you know, those reasons, I think a lot of comedians, that resonates a lot with me. You know, I think it's, what I love about comedy is that the range of people that give it a go, and the fact that, you know, there's people you would think, well, they could never do comedy with such and such, and you'd think someone who can't speak, they're probably not going to ever do comedy. And that's what's amazing about stand-up comedy, is that you can do stand-up comedy, you can overcome that and become a stand-up comedian. That's the power of the medium. But yeah, it is. What was the moment that made you decide to give comedy a go, given all that shyness? And
it came about because my mate thought it would work well. Of course, I thought he was crazy, but the idea stuck in the back of my head. Eventually, a few months later, I decided to give it a try because I knew I'd regret it if I didn't. It turns out my mate was right. It's just grown from there, really. I don't think there was a moment when I realized I was funny. I think it just developed over time. I've always enjoyed watching comedy shows on television and grew up watching the likes of Jack D and Lee Evans doing stand-up. I'm also a huge fan of The League of Gentlemen, which explains my twisted sense of humor. So I guess it just grew out of all of that, really. I do remember always enjoying making other people laugh, though. It made me feel good. So it's nice to now be able to do that for a living.
Yeah, great. You've written a book as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the book?
My book is called I'm Only In It For The Parking. And it's basically answering all the stupid questions that I get asked about my disability. I think the question that I'm sick of being asked the most is definitely, are you as clever as Stephen Hawking? Spoiler alert, I'm not. And the funniest is probably when people ask me really personal stuff like if I can sex. This really amuses me. Contrary to popular belief, disabled people can actually have sex. And if I have managed to convince someone to sleep with me, then there's still hope for the rest of the disabled population as well. I'm not sure why so many people seem to think that I can't have relationships. Obviously, it'd be awkward if I started to talk dirty in bed. There's no way I can say something filthy to a woman without her imagining she was in bed with RoboCop.
And there's an audio book of your book. Was that just copy and paste and then go home?
In theory, that should have been the case. But doing the audiobook was probably one of the hardest part of the whole thing. This was because I had to go through it page by page to check that my iPad pronounced every word correctly, check that the pace of the speech was understandable, and things like that. By the end, I was absolutely sick of listening to my own book.
And okay, we're nearly out of time, unfortunately. So let's talk about what is your show about this year.
This year's Edinburgh show is an extension of my book and its stupid questions. I think my show this year is definitely a reflection on what has happened to me since I won Britain's Got Talent in 2018. Ever since winning the ITV show, I've had people coming up to me and congratulating me, which is great. But I've also had almost the same amount of people coming up to me and asking me stupid questions about my disability. So I'm using my time in Edinburgh to answer all of these for you.
Great. And what time's it on and whereabouts are you on? Let me see.
My show is called I'm Only in It for the Parking. And it's on at the Gilded Balloon at 7:30 every night of the festival. And if people can't make it to Edinburgh, then I'm taking this show on a tour of the UK in October and November.
Terrific, good. Well, I mean, I gave you your big break back in Rich Tone's Edinburgh Fringe podcast and gave you 5 minutes of stand-up. I'm sure that's why this has all come about. I'm very glad to hear. I should say to the audience here, we are doing a collection for Scope after the show, which is a fantastic charity that I'm a patron of. I think you're also involved working with Scope, who are doing lots of great work for disabled people. So if you think those programmes are worth and you would like to donate, there will be people with buckets after the show. I think we're going to get a good amount today. I hope so. You can also text the number in the programme if you can't do that. Have you got anything to say about the collection?
Scope is a fantastic charity that helps disabled people every day. Many of us would be lost without it. So, if you put just £10 into the bucket, you could be helping dickheads like me achieve their dreams. And meet Paul from the Chuckle Brothers at the Royal Variety Performance.
Yeah, we've done very well. We've raised a lot of money over the years for Scope, so please do carry on giving generously. I still haven't been given a free parking disabled badge, which is all I did it for in the first place. We'll find out what the price is to give. It may be having to lose a leg, mightn't it? I might have to put a leg in the bucket. Let's see what I'm going to get for that.
You can borrow mine.
Okay, good. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a massive round of applause. Lost Voice guy, Lee Ridley. Thank you, man. That was awesome. We're back tomorrow. Bryony Kimmings, I'm going to see. And Arabella Weir tomorrow as well. Please come and see that. Thank you very much. Goodbye. You have been listening to Rahulastapa at the Edinburgh Fringe with me, Richard Herring. Thank you to Pest for providing the music. Thank you to everyone at the Newtown Theatre and The Stand. And everyone at GoFasterStrike.com. The producer is James Hingley. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStrike.com production. Go to Rahulastapa.co.uk to find out more. RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out who my guests are for the rest of the run.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.